Hello and welcome to this special audio recording from the Society for Shamanic Practice. It's a member benefit provided to members of SSP. And I welcome you all for listening to us today. My name is Jamie Meyer. I'm a board member of Society for Shamanic Practice. And today we have a panel discussion with three people who are all students of the Celtic shamanic tradition. And we'll be kind of talking and chatting a bit about how we were drawn to the Celtic tradition, what we've learned from it in some ways, what we find important about it. And we'll offer you a couple of practices that you can take with you after this audio so that you can start using it for yourself. So I'd like to introduce ourselves first. I'll start with myself first, just since I'm talking already. I'm Jamie Meyer. I'm a shamanic practitioner. I live in Minneapolis. I've been working the shamanic path for probably a little over 30 years. Fell into the Celtic shamanic path probably about 20 years ago or 15 years ago maybe, through being introduced to one of our panelists, Tom Cowan. It's been a wonderful journey for me into what I think of as my own ethnic ancestry. I've traced part of my ancestry to Scotland, and so I think of the Celtic tradition as kind of in my own bones and in my DNA, and that's been a very special aspect of it for me. I'd like to move now to Jane Burns, who is another panelist. And Jane, why don't you introduce yourself to us a little bit and tell us what drew you into this Celtic tradition?
Well, thank you, Jamie. I live in Southbury, Connecticut, and I teach and have a shamanic practice here. I've been practicing shamanism for about 15 years, came in through the doorway of core shamanism, but I think from the very beginning I really wanted to have a tradition to follow, and it really seemed to me that that was important if you want to go deeply into the work. At that same time, kind of concurrent with when I first started studying core shamanism, I was introduced to and came to really deeply appreciate the work of John O'Donohue, who was a Celtic mystic and poet. And his work really spoke profoundly to my Celtic roots and my heritage. I felt like it just kind of primed the pump and just sort of opened something up and awakened something in me that when I stumbled on an offering by our panelist, Tom Cowan, in Celtic shamanism, I just felt that the timing of that was just absolutely right, and I really leapt at the opportunity to explore that, and I've stayed with it. I think the mark of a good teacher is that they inspire you to stay with the subject and go as deeply as you can on it, and Tom has always been that teacher for me.
Good, thanks. Well, Tom, as our third panelist, your name has already come up, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Jane. Yes, I'm Tom Cowan, and I've been studying shamanism for over 30 years. Like so many of us, I got into shamanism through the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, Michael Harner and Sandy Ingerman's work, and they taught us core shamanism. And we used to joke back then and say, you can learn core shamanism, but you can't practice it. And what we meant by that was that core shamanism is the basic principles and practices of shamanism, but it doesn't provide a spirituality or a theology or a cultural context in which to practice it. And so many of us have a yearning for that. That mystical yearning that Jane just talked about, that she found in John O'Donohue. We wanted to practice core shamanism in some kind of a cultural tradition. And Native American traditions didn't feel right to me, or African traditions, or any of those, because I'm basically a European product. And I was always drawn to Celtic spirituality, even back in my Catholic days. So it seemed like a natural fit to go back and read the old myths and legends and the old folk practices from Celtic lands and see if I could spot something that looked like shamanism. And there really is a lot. There's a lot of remnants of what was probably a very strong shamanic tradition in the indigenous Celtic cultures. So mm-hmm. That's where I am.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning the kind of the question around. I remember reading many years ago I think it might have been a quote from a book by Ann Ross. I hope it's the right one, but the phrase was, if you are of European ancestry, you can call yourself a Celt. Because the Celtic influence is so pervasive and so broad, even though it's multi-layered and, you know, variable, but the Celtic influence is so broad that anybody, basically, you know, white people can call the Celtic tradition their own in a certain way. What do you guys think about that?
I'm always telling clients that because I, you know, I'm practicing Celtic shamanism with them, and even if they're, you know, Germanic extraction or Eastern European or, you know, or French or Spanish or whatever, I'm telling them, you know, and even Greek, you know, I'm telling them you probably have Celtic roots because the Celts, of course, were all over Europe, and it's that wonderful kind of spirit of the explorer and the adventurer that's deep within the Celtic tradition that I think comes from that, because they were everywhere and they did have that fervor and that desire and hunger to learn about different cultures and to move about the planet, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually tell people that too, that if you're from a European background, or the way I like to put it is, if you've been educated in the West, you probably have picked up a lot of Celtic ideas and Celtic concepts, because so much of that has been woven into the literature and the arts and the mm-hmm. poetry mm-hmm. that we study in the Western world. So even if you're an Asian, but you've grown up here and were educated here in the West, you probably have been exposed to a lot of Celtic ideas, the Grail Quest, Halloween, the 1st of May, the Robin Hood motif, Arthur, Merlin. I mean, it goes on and on, and those are all very old Celtic concepts and Celtic figures.
Right. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Thanks for saying that. It's sometimes we forget, because it's so obvious, we forget that we have been steeped in the Celtic world our whole lives, if you're in the West at all. Well, one of the questions that I had when we first put this audio together was, you know, somebody who's listening who may be very new to shamanism or maybe new to the idea of Celtic shamanism, I'd like us to just kind of maybe explore a little bit about what is it, what are practices or, I guess, beautiful things that you've experienced along the Celtic shamanic path that we can share in a fairly brief time for people who are, you know, fairly new to this idea of Celtic shamanism. Do either of you have an idea off the top of your head about practice or just something of power that you'd like to share?
Well, I'd like... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jane.
A time-honored Celtic spiritual practice that I really love, and I encourage my students and bring it into my Celtic shamanism classes, and that I really try to blend into the ongoingness of my day and my life, is the giving of blessings and praise. Celtic blessings are very popular. Everyone's familiar with them. It's kind of that thing that Tom was just mentioning about how pervasive some of the culture and this sensibility are. And there are many, many collections of them available, and some of them are, you know, quite ancient, and some of them have been modified and adapted to fit a more Christian vision. And we all know, of course, you know, may the road rise to meet you and the wind be always at your back, etc. But this is a lovely, lovely practice, I think, to keep in mind as you go through your day, to extend blessings to others and their experience, and also to put protection around ourselves as we, you know, begin our day and as we part company, as we undertake challenges or journeys, to call on the nature beings or the gods to protect us, to shape how that experience is going to proceed. and to extend good fortune and prosperity and grace in our ongoing living. As part of that tradition, not just to invoke the powers of nature for protection and strength, but it's really also to acknowledge and engage in this kind of ongoing praise and appreciation for the beauty and splendor of nature that's always present with us, and the preciousness of the gift of the day. You know, each day is a gift. The sun was typically greeted and praised, the moon as it rose and went through its phases, the winds and wiles of the ocean, you know, the passing of the seasons, as well as, you know, noting the different periods and customs of the day, you know, like whether it was the making of the porridge or the milking of the cow or the noonday meal or the smearing of the ashes at night. And this is just a lovely consciousness and practice and tradition to bring into your own life, to make us more present in our lives. You know, you're noticing everything around you. You're being very, very conscious about what it is that you're doing, what action you're undertaking, and being, you know, thankful, praising nature for the beauty that it's giving to us, and asking perhaps for it to share its brilliance or its serenity with us when we need it. You know, it's said that the young live in the future, and the older folks live in the past. And I don't know how true that is, but I think that either way, it doesn't really seem to serve us. And so, you know, just imagine the impact on your life if this were a customary practice, to be living in a state of constant wonder and connection to nature and its magic, and allowing it to inspire you, to make you feel safer, to make you feel more present and more appreciative of your ongoing life. I think that there's also virtue in that practice. You know, it's a demonstration of our trust and our gratitude, our generosity, developing faith and reverence and acceptance of all that life gives us. And I think it just helps us to live more from the soul and less from the ego, which I think we would all agree of benefit,
right.
Mutual benefit.
Well,
yeah,
actually,
go ahead, Tom.
Well, if I could just jump in here, I'd like to give a couple examples of what Jane's talking about, because what she's saying is typical of how I try to live my day too. And she mentioned praising the sun when you see it in the morning. And there's an old Scottish blessing that I'll share with you. When I see the sun first thing in the day, I say, "Hail to you, sun of the seasons. You are climbing into the sky on steady feet. You will fly across the heavens with strong wings. You are the glorious mother of the stars. Hail to you, son of the seasons. You lie down in the dangerous ocean without fear, without injury. You rise up again like a young queen in the bloom of life. Hail to you, son of the seasons. You are the ancient mother of the stars." Mm. And that little prayer is, I love it. As you can tell,
yeah.
I know it by heart because I say it almost every day when I see the sun for the first thing in the morning. And then there's a similar blessing for the moon. When you see the moon at night, it goes something like this: "You are the moon of moons. You are the darling of the sun. You are the sweetheart of the stars. I am lifting up my eyes to you. I am lifting up my voice to you. I am bowing my head to you. I bend my knee to you. You are beautiful. You are the moon of moons."
Mm.
And when you say things like that, you really begin to think of the sun and the moon as sort of like your friends. They come back every day or every night, and they're there for you to bring you beauty and joy.
Yeah. You know, what both of you are saying makes me think about, excuse me, how in a strange way, how radical what both of you just said is for our current world. The idea of waking up in the daytime and blessing the world, blessing the beauty of the world, blessing the gifts of pleasure and joy and delight in the world, which is so very Celtic, as I understand it, and how what a radical notion that is for us today. And we hear a lot in conversation in politics and, you know, other realms about how we need radical solutions to the future and we need radical cultural shift and things like that. And I guess what makes me, you know, the shamanic person that I am or whatever is that I feel like the most radical choice we could make right now is exactly what both of you are saying, which is to wake up and perceive the world as full of blessing and then to deliver that blessing to others and be a conduit for that blessing. It's completely radical. It's insane by our daily standards, and that's what I absolutely love about it.
So, one of the things that I like to keep in mind as I go through the day is the old Irish tradition of the three strains of music, that there's the strain of sorrowful music, the strain of joyful music, and the strain of peaceful music. And I like to think of those as categories, that the sorrowful music are all the things that I don't like in my day, all the frustrations, all the maybe the challenges of things that go wrong. And I think to myself, but these are the songs of sorrow. It's part of the great song of life. And when I'm having a really good time, I try to be aware that these are the songs of joy, and that too is part of the great song of life. And the third one, peace or rest, is almost like a Buddhist saying that you can't have dualism. You can't just have joy and sorrow. You've got to have a third place where you can rest, where you can be, you can step outside the tug between joy and sorrow that goes on all day long in your life, and to remember that there is that third strain of music, and it too is part of the great song of life. Some Celtic people talk about the Oran Mór, which means great song, and can also mean the universe, that the universe is a great song. And sometimes they even use the Oran Mór phrase to mean the creator, God, that God is also the great song. And so as I go through my day and try to share the blessings that you were talking about, I try to keep my eyes open for joy and sorrow and peace and connect to it as if this is the God of life singing to me at this moment in this particular day. And I try to accept it and live with it and bless it, even though it might be sorrowful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's. I always tell people it's fine to sing the blues, right?
Yeah.
If your heart is aching, sing it off. Just sing it out.
Right.
Be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to hear the song of life, to hear the great song, and also to sing back. There was a lovely practice that you taught us, Tom, Gonconic. Love talking to nature, and singing as you walk through the woods, or you know as you're going about the chores of your day, to express the joy and the appreciation of having that day, of being able to do those chores. I remember years ago when I had an experience with cancer and you know just went through that whole thing and. There was one day when I was ironing a shirt, and it was after that was over, and I was, like, crying because I was so grateful that my day had just suddenly become, my life had suddenly become so ordinary that I was having just this ordinary moment of ironing a shirt for my son. And we forget commonly, unless we've been put under a test of duress and adversity or some kind of ordeal, we forget how beautiful those simple things are and how valuable to just make oatmeal in the morning or have a cup of tea by the window and look at the birds and the trees, you know, how they grace our lives and how we can sing back. We can join in that conversation. And that is, like you said, Tom, you know, when you are in that frame of mind and in that practice, nature becomes your friend. The sun and the moon mm-hmm. become your friends. They are ones that you speak to, and that you certainly offer your acknowledgement and love and devotion to.
Yeah, what you're saying about the inherent goodness of all three streams of music, you know, so much in our culture pathologizes discomfort. So, like, if you feel sad, you know, you should not feel that. You should take mm-hmm. a pill and get happy right now, or you should go shopping and get happy. And so we have this culture that really encourages us to not really listen to all three strains of music. And in the Celtic shamanic tradition, Tom, what you were saying, and in other shamanic traditions as well, which is what I think is so powerful about them, is that they acknowledge that these all elements of nature are teachers. Some of them are more comfortable and more pleasant than others, but all of it is our teacher. I think a lot about this time of year that we're recording this audio in right now, near the winter solstice, and coming sort of out of the west on the wheel and into the north fully. And one of the figures in the Celtic tradition that's become so important to me is the Kelyach, or the Kelyuch, the old woman of winter. And I've worked with her for a long, long time. I do a winter solstice show that really explores her personality and what she does for us. And I've come to call her the one who comes to take away what needs to be taken away. And, you know, some of the stories about her is that she wakes up at Samhain, at Halloween, when the dark time of the year is fully emerging. She wakes up and she moves through the land, taking away what needs to be taken. And in this way, she's sort of associated with the crow and maybe with other carrion eaters, but certainly with the crow. And she moves through the land and takes away that which needs to go from this world and go and be taken to the other world, that which would poison life now if it stayed. So she takes that, or that which is no longer necessary, or that which is burdening us and needs to be removed so that there's room in us for more blessing. She's a very, very important figure to me, and she's not easy to work with, and she's not comfortable to work with, but she's been so powerful for me, especially as we move into autumn and toward the winter solstice. This figure of the Kelyuch, and that word Kelyuch translates, well, like a lot of, you know, words, it translates many ways. One way that it translates is the old one, which I think is as mysterious as it can be. And other times it's translated as the veiled one, the one with the veil. And that's about as mysterious as it can be. So she's a really old Celtic figure. There's stories about her as being the goddess of winter, which I think kind of limits her powers. But there's stories in Scotland that she is actually the creator of the land, that she, you know, in the ancient times, she walked the land and spilled the boulders out of her skirt and created the hills and the rocky outcroppings. And so she's connected with a very primal, ancient kind of sense of creation. But so much of her personality is that she comes to take away. And I think we're in a time of her, you know, we have been for a while, but we certainly can feel her presence, not only because winter is coming on, but also just culturally there's so much that is being stripped away and dismembered. And so she's one of my favorite figures, and I just wanted to bring her forward because we're kind of at her time of year right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's one of my favorites as well. And
also
me, I think
one of mine.
Yeah. You can't not love her.
No.
You can't afford to.
No.
It's a strange love, you know. It's a strange love of her, but it is a deep love, yeah.
Yeah. To me, she represents chaos. She represents those times when you do need to kind of surrender to what will be. And we do kind of undergo that in winter. You know, you were just saying, Jamie, you know, you wake up and it's 8 degrees. In Minneapolis, and we know it's coming. You know, we feel the impending doom of winter and the dark time, and we have to kind of put our trust in her and lean into her because she knows how to create out of chaos and change. And, you know, I think one of the sweetest and wisest things that ever came to me in a journey, we had to journey to the ancestors in a workshop I was in with Sandra Ingerman, and ask what it is that we've forgotten that they knew that is important for our time. And they said, make chaos your ally. Mm. And I just love the depth of that. There's so many ways of looking at it. We are afraid of chaos and we are afraid of change. And that's a very, I think it would feel very strange to the ancients to try that thought process and that posture on to kind of steer away from change or not embrace it and acknowledge it and realize that it is within change that there is the power to actually do what we need to do, to learn what we need to learn, to heal what we need to heal. Without change, everything stops. Yeah. And winter is a time that requires us, I think, to really take on that kind of idea of making chaos our ally.
Yeah, I think of the Kalyuk as my teacher of darkness. A number of years ago, our drumming circle did a journey to find a teacher of darkness. And the Kalyuk came to me. And this was 15 years ago or so. And she's been with me ever since as someone who can help me get through the dark times, the literal dark times of the winter, when seasonal affective disorder is rampant. And also spiritual dark times when I'm not sure of where to go or not sure I'm doing the right thing. She's someone I can trust because she can see in the dark. She's, as you said, Jamie, she's veiled. She can see, even though I may not be able to see her, she can see me. And she's old. In a sense, she's seen it all. So I trust her very much to get me through dark times. And the other thing I wanted to say, too, about her shaping the earth and creating the earth, she's been referred to as an earth shaper, one of the primal figures that shapes the earth. In fact, one person referred to her as being like the goddess of tectonic plates, that she's got that power to just kind of shift the earth and create an earthquake or create a tsunami or a hurricane. And that brings that chaos and it brings destruction. But, Jane, like you were saying, it's change is what we have here on this planet, and we've got to be able to accept it and accommodate ourselves to it. So I find her to be really important in my life now when we're thinking about global warming and the changes in the seasons and what it's all leading to. She might be our salvation here to get through it and see the worth of it.
Yeah. And the idea of, for me, feeling connected to her, feeling connected to these powers that we're all talking about her, for some strange reason that I can't quite articulate, it makes me feel more grounded in the windstorm, of change. It makes me feel a little less fearful of the change. I guess it's sort of like standing with her because she knows what she's doing. And so if I'm standing with her, in a prayerful way or a ceremonial way, when I make offerings to her and I think about her and stuff, I think, well, I'm standing with her, so I'm going along with the ride rather than being swept away because I'm trying to resist it. And so, in some way, it helps me through these whirlwind times to be aligned with her in some strange way. There's a poem that I thought of by Wendell Berry that I use sometimes, and I think about the Kalyuk, and it goes like this. It's a celebration of the darkness. At the winter solstice, we so often leap right to the light, the return of the light, but it's still really dark, for a long time. Throughout the winter, this winter time, the light kind of starts creeping back, but it's still really dark. And so there's this poem by Wendell Berry. It goes like this. To go into the dark with the light is to know only the light. To know the dark, go without sight. And you may find that the dark, too, blooms and sings. and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Very
that's
nice.
Perfect for
yeah.
our time.
Yeah. That's but, something that I can imagine the Kaleo kind of singing under her breath as she's
yeah.
doing her work.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, when we've explored, you know, the darkness with the Kaleok, and I guess I'd kind of like to turn to, open up the conversation to other kind of pleasures and joys. I don't know, are there stories or other characters or, you know, ideas in the Celtic tradition that you find really delightful or joyful in some way?
Well, Tom had mentioned the, you know, kind of the preponderance of the Grail Seekers and the quest for the Holy Grail earlier on in the Celtic tradition. And Percival was a Grail Seeker and a Welsh hero, and he's one of my favorites. And I do like the story of him. Percival was also the grandson and the son of other Grail Seekers, and his father became the target of envy, and that envy grew into treachery, and he was killed. And his loyal followers advised Percival's mother to take him into hiding in order to spare his life, and so she did that, and she stole him away to a deep wood where he could grow up in safety and with no knowledge of his father or of this destiny that the tragedy had kind of bequeathed to him. And one day he was wandering in the forest, and he witnessed, unbeknownst to them, a band of traveling knights and champions, and they were practicing their skills and their games in the wood, and he was hooked immediately, and he recognized his own calling and theirs, and he knew that he had to answer it, and so he bade his mother goodbye, and he took to the road. And after some time of being on the road, he came to a place where the road divided into three, and sitting nearby was a ferryman, and he was playing his flute, and so he approached the ferryman, and he said, "Do you know where these three roads lead?" And the man said, "Indeed I do. The first road will lead to a great and sumptuous banquet where your plate and your stomach will never be empty. And your choices will never be limited, and your appetite will never go unsatisfied. And the second road leads to a peaceful and beautiful glen. And this glen is filled with the most enchanted music that you will ever hear. And this music will keep you in a state of peace and tranquility so that no fear or worry will ever touch you. But the third road is a treacherous and a precarious one. And no one really can foretell what that road holds. No one can even imagine what kind of fearsome beasts or ordeals or terrors that it contains, and no one knows how arduous the path or how great the dangers that it holds." And so the man then says to Percival, "Which road will you choose?" And Percival says, "The third one, of course, because everyone knows that that is the road of the hero, and that is the road that the hero must walk." And one of the things I love about that story is that I think that it kind of reminds me of the story of the human soul as it comes into the world, you know, walking that treacherous road and not knowing what ordeals or dangers or struggles or challenges that we're going to meet, and yet here we come, you know. And so it speaks to me to the heroic nature of the human soul, which I think is well worth our remembering from time to time in our daily lives as we come a little bit more away from the ego and lean a little bit more into the whims and ways of the soul. I think we're always much better off. And to sort of, you know, approach life with that same kind of pluck and enthusiasm as Percival and say, you know, this is the road I choose, this road of my life. I think, you know, when we talk about sovereignty, which is the center of the Celtic wheel, how unsovereign we are so often, how much we don't live our life, and we put things on the shelf and we put things on the back burner and we say someday, and oh yeah, I always wanted to do that, but I just have all these other things to do and I'll never get around to it. And how much are we really living our life? How much of that ground are we really covering and claiming and owning and exploring in the way that a hero would? So I find that story very, very inspiring for me.
That's good. Yeah. Thanks for telling us that.
Yeah.
Tom, what about you? Do you have anything that speaks to you at the moment?
I'm still back on the road with James. three choices there. But you know what that reminds me of that I do like a lot? And it goes back to this idea I brought up before, that the Celtic mind isn't happy with dualism. The Celtic mm-hmm. mind always wants to get a third place. And in the story of Thomas the Rhymer, the Fairy Queen is taking him to her world. And they come to a division in the road where there are three choices. There's a road to the left, and there's one in the middle, there's one on the right. And the one road on the left is very straight and wide and easy going. The road on the right is kind of twisted and it goes up a steep hill and it's rocky and it doesn't look like you could travel it very well. And the one in the middle goes into the forest and disappears. And so she explains to him that the road on the left, the bright, well-lit, wide road, that's the road that wicked people go down. That's the road of destruction. That's the road of the ego. And the road on the right that's difficult and hard, that's the road for the righteous. That's the ones who are trying to prove something about themselves. She said, but the road to the fairy world goes straight through the forest and twists and turns around. And you have to be willing to say, I don't know exactly where it's going, but I want to go on it. I want to take that middle mm-hmm. road so that I don't have to be with just the good doers and just the evil doers, but I want that fairy world that doesn't really have those categories of good and bad and right and wrong.
Yeah. It's the road of the middle way, right?
The middle way, yeah.
The road of the thin-skinned warrior.
Mm-hmm. The greenwood. Go into the greenwood because that's where you'll find the grail.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the path of, what I take from what you're saying, Tom, is the path where judgments are withdrawn, in one road you judge who's righteous and in the other road you judge who's wicked. And in the path, and I extend that to say the shamanic path, one of the core elements in the shamanic path is to, resist the instant judgments, because when we do, that's when the magic opens up.
Yeah.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, and some versions of that story actually say that the one road is the road to heaven and the other road is the road to hell.
Sure.
And there again, you've got a dualistic choice, choose one or the other. But there's that shamanic choice which says, no, I'm going to explore the forest and see what's there.
Yeah.
The unknown.
Well, Jane, did you want to add something?
No, I just said the unknown.
The unknown, yeah. Well, speaking of the unknown and the winding path, I think our time on our call is winding to an end. And I guess I'd like to kind of bring things together here for the listener. First of all, by thanking you, Tom and Jane, and for the stories and the comments and the illumination that you've brought, and just say that this idea that we've kind of hit on of the non-duality, the adding together all the things, and the idea that things operate in threes so often in the Celtic tradition, I'll leave you all with a little blessing You know, the idea that in the Celtic world, that there is, and this is found in other shamanic traditions too, there's the world above us, there's the world below us, and there's the world that we're in now, the middle world, and all of them give us their blessings. And so I'll leave you with this little blessing that feel free to use in the world and use on yourself. It comes from Alexander Carmichael's huge book, the Carmina Gadelica, which if you're a new student to the Celtic tradition, check this book out. It's online, and you can also buy it. Carmina Gadelica, like Gaelic, G-A-E-D-E-L-I-C-A. It's a fantastic compilation of charms and spells from Scotland. Anyway, this is my version of one of those spells. You are the pure love of the silver stars. You are the pure love of the green earth. You are the pure love of the blue sea. You are the pure love of the creator of life. You are the pure love of the silver stars. You are the pure love of the green earth. You are the pure love of the blue, blue sea. You are the pure love of the creator of all, of the creator of life. So thank you, Tom and Jane. Thank you to the Society for Shamanic Practice for hosting these audios. And thank you all to the listener for being a member of SSP and for walking this winding, difficult path into the green wood. In the path of the unknown, in the path of the hero. And blessings to you on your journey. And goodbye for now.